Hello, it's Debbie back with the Decatur Herald and Review e-edition being read off the computer, I guess e-edition says that, on Wednesday, February 8th, 2017, starting as usual with the first page and the great big above the crease story with the great big Cubs trophy, the World Series trophy. It says, "Dude, where's our trophy?" And so it says, Decatur, this by Tupps, T-U-P-P-S, Mark Tupper, I guess. Decatur, for the first time in 108 years, a World Series trophy won by the Chicago Cubs is taking a victory lap across America. It has found its way to Gretna, Nebraska, Mason City, Iowa, Kalamazoo, Michigan. Soon it will glisten in the sunshine of Mesa, Arizona. It was a star attraction at the annual Cubs convention, and next week, proud, emotional fans will line up to have their picture taken at it with next to it at the Chicago Auto Show at McCormick Place. The trophy has twice been displayed at Illini basketball games, first at the United Center in Chicago and last weekend at the State Farm Center in Champaign. Yes, it's been to Central Illinois, to Champaign, to both Bloomington and Normal, and on March 8th, the Cubs Trophy Tour presented by State Farm will find its way to Springfield. It's even been to Lincoln. Wait, not Lincoln, Illinois. Today it's Lincoln, Nebraska, which leaves proud but jealous Cubs fans in Decatur asking Cubs owner Tom Ricketts a very important question. Tom, dude, where's our trophy? We understand demand for the trophy sky high and credit the Cubs for taking a regional approach that has allowed fans in neighboring states to have a once-in-a-lifetime chance to stand proudly next to the crown jewel of the sport, the silver and gold Tiffany Design Commissioner's Trophy, the one with the 30 waving flags, one for each team in Major League Baseball. I once thought standing in line to have a picture taken next to the trophy was a little too fanboyish, but when I got my picture snapped last weekend at the Illini Minnesota game, it gave me goosebumps. I was face to face with something I thought I may never see. But holy cow! Decatur is the home of Bill Madlock, the former Cub who won four National League batting titles. This is the home of Rose Skidmore, whose 1,000 career batting average with the Cubs, one for one, will never be topped. For crying out loud, this is Bod Skeffington country, as legendary announcer Harry Carey said time and time again. A salute to one of his favorite Budweiser distributors. More important, this is the front line of the Cubs Cardinal battleground, where generations of foot soldiers fans have bravely waged war with our misguided friends and neighbors. It hasn't been easy playing the wait till next year game season after season, and many of us have mental and physical bruises from the hand-to-heart combat. We've never abandoned our posts. We've circled the wagons and dug in for the long haul, and you can imagine how the tears flowed and the pride swelled when the Cubs rose up in the 10th inning of Game 7 to win the World Series. So, please, Mr. Ricketts, if there's any way to fit us into your schedule, give us a chance to see this historic trophy with our own eyes, to show it to our grandparents and our children. Good news, Decatur, our pleas may have already been heard. Late developments have given us reason to believe Decatur will be added to the tour schedule after all. Sources I spoke with Tuesday said they're not ready for an announcement that includes date, time, and place, but that Decatur has been on the radar all along. Keep an eye on mid-March. I know the State Farm Trophy Tour is soon headed to spring training in Arizona, and that makes sense. Attendance in Mesa will be tremendous. It's a perfect spot to display the Holy Grail. But the trophy is scheduled to be in Springfield on Wednesday, March 8th. There's plenty of time between them and the Cubs' home opener on April 10th. Why not swing right over to Decatur after the Springfield visits? 35 miles to the east, and our city would be a proud and enthusiastic host. It seems like yesterday that Albert Almora Jr. was tagging up Chris Bryant's deep fly ball, racing into second and changing the field the most nerve-wracking inning ever played. A chance to view the World Series trophy would give us a jolt of pride at the perfect time, just before the Cubs launch their quest to do this all over again. We'll get you a crowd, I promise. And maybe next year, when you won another one of these, we'll let a different community jump to the front of the line. Might I suggest Lincoln, Illinois, not Nebraska. End of the article by Mark Tupper. Next, so long, Sir Thomas. Decatur's first club celebrates history at final meeting. This is by Teresa Churchill, a senior writer with H&R. Decatur, since getting its charter at a dinner dance at Scoville Golf Course in 1954, Decatur's first Sir Thomas Club has raised more than $500,000 for charities such as Boy Scouts in the former Easter Seals, Central Illinois. So it was fitting for six members at the club's final meeting Tuesday to give $10,000 to the capital campaign for a $2.5 million building for the Northeast Community Fund on North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. Four of us are in Florida, said Jim. Oh, sorry, I'm not reading really well here. Four of us are in Florida, said Dick Deckhart, who at 83 is one of the club's longest-serving members. Times have changed, but I hope the remaining service clubs can still make these kinds of contributions to the community. Membership peaked at 101 people in 1958, with the Sir Thomas Club of Decatur informally becoming the Noon Sir Thomas Club after the Breakfast Sir Thomas organized in 1972. The two clubs then began presenting the traditional Service to Mankind Award jointly, with 1978 winner Henrietta Armstrong going on to become the winner for Sir Thomas International. The local winner in 1987 was Jerry Pells, executive director of the Northeast Community Fund, who described his 47-year-old homegrown ministry as the Crekles of social services in Decatur. We help people both with their basic needs and also those who are ready to move out of poverty, Pelt said. We're able to survive in our present building, but with this gift and others like it, we're going to be able to thrive for decades to come. Reagan Deering, building campaign chairwoman, said the $10,000 gift from the Noon Sir Thomas certainly will put us over the $1 million mark. Other members of the Noon Sir Thomas Club present at the Decatur Club Tuesday were John Wassum, 89, Dick Fiala, 86, George Botson, 79, and Mike Cazola, 74, with Robert Bullock, 74, the newbie of the group, having joined just 2 years ago. Also in attendance was former member Orv Graham, 79, who shared what happened once after a potential donor said no to the Sir Thomas ringing bells for the Salvation Army outside the old J.C. Penney store downtown. The man said he preferred to wait till Christmas Eve and put money in the Army Workers' Kettle on the corner by Carson Peary Scott. She says, "Thank you and God bless you," he quoted, the man is saying, and I know she means it. Erwin Ahrens, who was unable to attend Tuesday, said beside the gift to the Northeast Community Fund, an additional $8,000 has been given to other local agencies over the past month as the club closed out its accounts. Club members have perhaps been most visible in their bright yellow vests, standing at the corner of West Main Street and Fairview Avenue, selling Maddox sweet corn, parking cars at the Decatur Celebration, and selling flowering patio pots and poinsettias grown by the Shelbyville Shelter Workshop. Other guests, including a half dozen members of the Decatur Ambucks, came to Tuesday's luncheon to wish the Noon Sir Thomas well. Fiala said the men probably will continue to meet weekly as a group of guys to keep their friendship going. We've done a lot of really good things together, he said. We had a lot of fun. End of that article. Breaking Bad in pill form, says the headline. Policy says ecstasy pills in shape of Walter White have been popping up. Ecstasy pills bring Breaking Bad to Macon County. This is by Tony Reed, as you know, one of the staff writers for H&R. Decatur. Police say Central Illinois criminal life is now imitating art after the discovery of ecstasy pills shaped like the face of Walter White, the lead character played by actor Bryan Cranston in the television series Breaking Bad. The Macon County Sheriff's Office said it found two of the pills during a traffic stop just outside of Decatur on January 28th. Sworn statements from Deputy A.S. Heiger described searching a 21-year-old male suspect. I located three pills that appeared to have been homemade due to their rough appearance and which were wadded up in a dollar bill, said Heiger. One of the pills was round and tested positive for ecstasy. The two other pills were in the shape of Walter White. The suspect tried telling me the pills were actually sweet tarts. Walter White is the terminally ill high school chemistry teacher who solves his cash flow problems by cooking up high-grade methamphetamine. He also goes by the street name Heisenberg, and a search of internet news sites reveals that another name for street drugs that take the form of pills shaped like the White character's face, and they've been showing up in police drug raids as far away as Great Britain. Now, I've seen pills in odd shapes before, Macon County Sheriff Thomas Snyder said, but pills shaped like Walter White? Absolutely the first time for me. Snyder said the pills remind him in texture and color of the Flintstone multivitamins sold for children. But why shape an illegal narcotic to look like a fictional crime boss? A highly acclaimed TV show achieved a huge audience, and Snyder said real-life dealers of illegal drugs want to tap into that sense of cool success. I've seen drugs shaped like cartoon characters, even Mickey Mouse, and those drugs are given these different forms to make them more intriguing and appealing, the sheriff said. The 21-year-old suspect pulled over by the deputy isn't facing a very appealing future, however. Alerted by an allegedly strong cannabis smell, Higer said he searched the suspect and also found 1 gram of cannabis, and he then persuaded the suspect to extract a 6 gram bag of cannabis hidden in the crotch area of his underwear. The suspect was jailed and later made bail on preliminary charges of drug possession and obstructing justice after allegedly handing over false identification. Sworn statements said he also wanted it on an outstanding warrant for a charge of unlawful restraint. End of that article. Next, Dennis rises for the defense. Proposal to discard state symbols not popular with Dennis kids. This is by Valerie Wells from the staff of H&R. Decatur. With Illinois in its second year without a budget, one state legislator seems to think discarding state symbols is a good use of his time. A bill proposed in the Illinois State Senate would get rid of state symbols, such as a state bird, flower, and state animal, among many others. Republican State Senator Tom Rooney of Rolling Meadows proposed the bill. He said too many state symbols have decreased the value of the important ones. Rooney's legislation would only keep the state flag, seal, motto, and song. During the 1974-75 school year, Dennis students mounted an effort to have the monarch declared as the state's official insect. The project taught students hands-on lessons in how government works and was the first time children had ever proposed a bill to the Illinois legislature that became law. Then Governor Dan Walker signed it on October 2, 1975. If I could talk to that man, I'd say, back off, said Andrew Finley, a fifth grader who was one of the students who gave presentation to the school board and city to get Dennis's mosaic butterfly sculpture declared a local landmark. When Andrew and his classmates were in the third grade in 2014-15, they followed suit with their effort to get the mosaic butterfly named a local landmark, and they, too, succeeded, celebrating their success on the 40th anniversary of the original law. I worked hard on that, Andrew said. I do not want them to do that. Why would somebody want to do that? Andrew said he learned the entire process of how to get a bill moved through the process to become a law, both locally and federally. He also learned about monarchs and that they're endangered, and he and his family planted milkweed, which monarchs require to live and breed, to lend the butterflies a helping hand. Sadly, it hasn't been all working, but we're trying our best, he said. Monarchs are important and beautiful. Robert Burry said the monarch represents Dennis School to him and is a symbol of what makes the school special and unique. I feel like we should have the monarch butterfly because we worked very hard to turn the mosaic into a landmark, Robert said. And if they take that symbol away, it's not going to be the Dennis the same way because our symbol is the butterfly. That's what Dennis is. I think we should keep it. The process of learning how to get a law passed, Robert said, made him and the other kids realize that you don't have to be an adult to change things. It made us realize we're powerful. He said, we can do things. You don't have to be grown up to be powerful. Teacher Linda Burnham, whose class the boys were in during the Landmark Project, said she thinks the state symbols provide a teaching tool for kids to learn about the native flora and fauna, and losing those symbols will take something precious from kids and adults, too. It teaches our students what native elements are in our state, she said. I believe the symbols are important to our school children for them to recognize things that belong to us. I just believe they're very important symbols they can take ownership in and learn to preserve. Reserve. State Senator Sam McCann, Republican Plainview, sponsored successful legislation in 2015 that was prompted by a group of fourth graders at Chatham Elementary School to make sweet corn the official state vegetable. McCann defended the use of the various state symbols in a statement, saying he feels the state symbol bills grow organically within regions and communities throughout Illinois. End of that article. Next, in government and politics, Shelbyville Council targets decrepit building. This is by Sharon Barcolo for the Herald and Review. Shelbyville. The Shelbyville City Council took its first steps Monday night toward demolishing an abandoned downtown building since beginning a code crackdown on decrepit properties almost 3 years ago. By the vote of 4-1, the council authorized City Attorney Jack Kiley to proceed with getting title to the former Rock Creations building on Main Street. Demolition could cause problems because the building may be attached to a neighboring furniture store. City officials have been unable to access the building, but contractors have said the basement level of the building is collapsing, and there is significant water damage from a leaky roof. The building's ultimate fate has been a council topic for more than a year. If the city is successful in getting a title, a demolition would cost $75,000 with the potential for more liability during the process. The building's out-of-state owner has failed to appear at court hearings on the building's status. We've got to do something about the building, though, City Commissioner Gibbs Smart said. If we don't and it collapses on the sidewalk or the street, we have a bigger problem. Council members discussed reports of caving walls and dangerous roofs. This whole thing is spooky, said Commissioner Brent Fogelman, who's the only member to vote against proceeding. I don't like getting into it if we don't know what's going to happen. After the council approved claiming the title, Fogelman said he hoped the project would be successful. Because, remember, I'm going to tell you I told so if it doesn't work out, he said. End of that article. On to local briefs for today, February 8th. Argenta First Ice Fest, the first ever Argenta Ice Fest featuring ice carving gold medalist Eric Kendall, maybe Arik, will be 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, February 11th in Prairie Park at the corner of Illinois 48 and East Elm Street. The free event will feature more than 20 ice sculptures, live demonstrations of ice carving, and games, plus a vendor fair at Friends Creek Community Center. Warming stations and shuttle service will also be provided. The Ice Fest is sponsored by Argenta in Motion, a group that grew out of mapping the future of your community process the village completed last year. Next, Shelbyville, abuse trial set. A Cowden couple charged with abusing their 12-day-old daughter will likely stand trial in February or March, lawyers said Monday. Kayla Gerard, 20, and Devin B. N. Porter, 19, are charged with aggravated battery to a child, a Class X felony. Both have been held at Shelby County Corrections Center on a $100,000 bond since their November 9th arrest. Monday, Judge Alan Bennett denied Porter's request to have his bond reduced to $5,000, something to which State Attorney Gina Bonahide objected. The baby suffered a number of broken bones, bruises, and human bite marks. Porter has a scheduled February 14th pretrial hearing, and Gerard waived her right to a speedy trial and agreed to a March 20 trial date. Next, Decatur. Gun fired into ceiling. Police reports say a drunken Decatur man who got into a heated argument late Sunday after watching the Super Bowl pressed the barrel of a handgun to another's forehead and threatened to shoot him before firing a shot into the ceiling. The report said the incident happened at a house in the 1300 block of East Walnut Street, and the 33-year-old suspect, who had initially fled the scene, was later arrested and jailed on a preliminary charge of aggravated assault. The victim, 53, was not listed as being injured. Patrol officers said they recovered a .22 caliber shell casing from the home and noted a hole in the ceiling. Next, Decatur. Mom-daughter fight. A Decatur mother who allegedly took violent exception to her own mother styling the hair of one of her granddaughters was arrested Monday night on preliminary charges of domestic battery. Sworn statements said the 33-year-old mother arrived home to find the grandmother fixing the hair of a teenage granddaughter and became instantly angered. She's accused of throwing the grandmother's belongings out the front door before physically trying to throw the 51-year-old victim out of the house. The two struggled, and the mother was accused of repeatedly biting the grandmother's left arm, elbowing her in the head, and whipping her across the face with an oversized plug on a hairdryer. The grandmother was eventually able to escape. Next, Decatur. Repeated 9/11 calls. And this is the last one of the briefs. A Decatur man who allegedly called 9/11 repeatedly and left messages threatening to use firearms and complaining, "How long is it going to be before I get emergency service?" found himself confronted by patrol officers early Monday and arrested. The 47-year-old man was booked on a preliminary charge of making false 9/11 calls. Sworn statements say he had called saying he needed police help to get his belongings, and in a series of six calls, he then warned, "I'll get my gun," and "somebody about to get shot" if police didn't come. In a further call, he's accused of acting as if a victim had been shot. When police arrived in the 1900 block of East William Street at 7:14 a.m., they said they had their dispatchers call the number back, and the phone the suspect had with him rang. The statement said he admitted making the calls, but denied saying he had a gun or was going to shoot anyone. Police said they've taped record all the calls. That's the end of the briefs. Next, on to the Decatur Tribune Online with Paul Osborne's City Beat, People, Places, and Interesting Races. Which candidates for city council and mayor will the unions for the city of Decatur endorse? These will be even more important endorsements than usual because of the controversies of the past year, especially the firing of former police chief Brad Sweeney. Meet, greet, Decatur City Council candidate Chuck Cool will hold a meet-and-greet fundraiser from 5:30 to 7:30 Thursday, February 16th at the Beach House on Lakeshore Drive. Suggested contribution is $50 for individuals and $75 for couples. RSVP to T.Cool, K-U-H-L-E, at Comcast.net or call 422-8861, 422-8861. Cool is the current general manager and director of tennis for the Decatur Athletic Club. He is a lifetime resident at Decatur, formerly Macon County Board member and tournament director for the 18th annual USTA Ursula Beck Pro Tennis Classic. Other candidates for the three city council seats up for election on April 4th are incumbent Patrick McDaniel, Chris Riley, Dave Horn, Marty Watkins, and Andrew Appel. Next. Feedback. Last week's column about what I learned in an interview with school board members B.A. Butts and Alita Graham regarding the controversy over former Superintendent Lisa Taylor's departure from the district drew quite a bit of chatter from readers. Most of the readers who contacted me said the article gave them a different view of the controversy, but they couldn't understand why this information didn't come out sooner. Sad is the next subtitle. When I spoke to the Saratoga Club of Decatur a few months ago, one of the members told me the club would probably not go on much longer due to declining membership. Yesterday, the club held its final meeting. I received an invitation to attend the last meeting, but because of this newspaper going to press at the same time, he couldn't go. I would have liked to have been there. However, Erwin Ahrens informed me that club at the meeting, in honor of the work our club has done during the years and because of the exciting new building being planned by the Northeast Community Center, we are planning to present a $10,000 check for this project to the director. In the closing of our accounts, we've distributed an additional $8,000 to various other local agencies during this past month. So, after 63 years of serving Decatur, the Saratoga Club of Decatur, an affiliate of Saratoga International, has dissolved. Saratoga, which stands for Service to Mankind, had grown to 101 members by 1958. Tuesday, it closed with 12 members. Members still active in the group since the early 1960s are Erwin Ahrens, Dick Deckard, John Logan, and Dr. John Wassum. I have more information on the history of the club on page 27 of the print edition. I have noticed in speaking to various local service clubs over the years, not only as mayor but as editor, the decline in membership, and I guess it is a sign of changing times. Clubs like Saratoga have done so much good to our community over the years, and it's sad to see this happening. God bless them all for their service to me and mankind. Next section here in his commentary. Moved. Ed Smith, Executive Director of Decatur Area Habitat for Humanity, called me a few days ago to inform me the organization has moved to 932 East Wood in Decatur. The new location will house the Habitat offices as well as the new, Restore. The offices open Monday through Friday, 9 to 4. The Restore is currently open on a limited basis, Thursday afternoons, 2 to 4, and Saturday mornings, 10 to 2. Donations are also accepted at the store or call to schedule a pickup at 330-5870. 330-5870. A grand opening for the store will be scheduled in the near future. The ReStore gives the public an opportunity to purchase donated building materials, household goods, and furniture at a reduced price. The funds generated are then used to support the mission of Habitat, building homes and strengthening the community. Ed said that Decatur area Habitat for Humanity believes everyone deserves a decent place to live and everyone can do something today to make that possible for another family. If you want to inquire about Habitat programs or volunteer, call the office at 425-6446, 425-6446. Keep up the good work, Ed, staff, and volunteers. Okay, that's the end of the Paul Osborne part. In national, tornadoes touchdown, wreak havoc in southern Louisiana. New Orleans AP. The three tornadoes that struck southeastern Louisiana on Tuesday injured about 20 people, destroyed homes and businesses, flipped cars and trucks, and left about 10,000 customers without power, but no deaths reported, the governor said. Governor John Bel Edwards took an aerial tour and made a disaster declaration before meeting with officials in New Orleans. The worst damage was in the same Ninth Ward that was so heavily flooded in Hurricane Katrina. So now we're going to go on to another article. Army approves route completion of pipeline. Army to allow completion of Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. This is out of Bismarck, North Dakota, AP. The Army said Tuesday it would allow the $3.8 billion Dakota Access Oil Pipeline to cross under a Missouri River reservoir in the North Dakota, clearing the way for completion of the disputed four-state project. However, construction could still be delayed because the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, which has led opposition to the pipeline, said it would fight the latest development in court. The Army intends to cancel further environmental study and allow the Lake Ohio crossing as early as Wednesday, according to court documents the Justice Department filed that include letters to Congress from Deputy Assistant Army Secretary Paul Kramer. The stretch under Lake Ohio, that is spelled O-A-H-E, O-A-H-E, is the final big chunk of work on the 1,200-mile pipeline that would carry North Dakota oil through the Dakotas and Iowa to a shipping point in Illinois. Developer Energy Transfer Partners had hoped to have oil flowing through the pipeline by the end of 2016, but construction has been stalled while the Army Corps of Engineers and the Dallas-based company battled in court over the crossing. The Standing Rock Sioux, whose reservation is just downstream from the crossing, fears a leak would pollute its drinking water and will challenge to the Army's decision to grant an easement, though the details were still being worked out, Attorney Jan Hasselman said. The tribe has led protests that drew hundreds and at times thousands of people who dubbed themselves, quote, water protectors, unquote, to an encampment near the crossing. ETP says the pipeline is safe. An assessment conducted last year determined the crossing would not have a significant impact on the environment. However, then Assistant Army Secretary for Civil Works, Joe Ellen Darcy, on December 4th, declined to issue permission for the crossing, saying a broader environmental study was warranted given the Standing Rock Sioux's opposition. ETP called Darcy's decision politically motivated and accused then-President Barack Obama's administration of delaying the matter until he left the office. The Corps launched a study of the crossing on January 18th, 2 days before Obama left office, that could have taken up to 2 years to complete. President Donald Trump signed an executive action on January 24th, telling the Corps to quickly reconsider Darcy's decision. This is the end of part one of the Decatur Herald and Review and the Decatur Tribune reading on February 8th, 2017 by Debbie, and I will be back again soon.